Good morning, this is Linda, and I'm going to be reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. Excuse me. We're going to begin with an article called Metalwork Begins on WTC I-Beam. It's out of Decatur and submitted by Jalen Cook. Motorcade transports the piece of E.L. Pruitt to E.L. Pruitt for finishing touches. After traveling thousands of miles from New York City to Decatur, a steel I-beam from the World Trade Center has made another stop in the journey to its future home at Nelson Park 911 Memorial. On Monday, a police-led motorcade transported the 13-foot-long, 1,500-pound beam from the Decatur Airport to the E.L. Pruitt Company workshop at 121 South Webster Street. Specializing in mechanical contracting and metalwork, the company was asked by the committee behind the memorial to assist in bringing its vision to life. "It is a huge honor," said Brett Cummings, project manager for E.L. Pruitt. "I am very proud that we were asked to be involved. I mean, you look at the beam and you almost get a lump in your throat. It touches you." The George A. Mueller Beer Company worked to bring the beam from New York to Decatur in 2015, when it was also accompanied on its first journey through the city by a large motorcade of motorcyclists and firefighters and police officers from multiple departments. Construction began August 1st at the site near the Beach House Restaurant, where the memorial will overlook Lake Decatur. Organizers have said they plan to have the memorial ready by September 11th, the 16th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. Among the people who watched as the motorcade left the airport parking lot was 14-year-old Kane Bobbitt. He first learned about the memorial by watching the news and asked his grandmother if she would take him to see the beam in person. "I think it's real cool," he said. Cummins said the E.L. Pruitt team will cut and weld the beam to the memorial's black granite base, allowing it to stand upright. They are also constructing two stylized twin towers out of stainless steel that will stand alongside the beam. "This is a very special thing for the city of Decatur, and it is going to be here forever," he said. Lauren Axe, liaison for the 911 memorial, said it was wonderful that the beam safely made it to its temporary home at E.L. Pruitt, despite a slight hiccup on the route to the workshop. The motorcade was supposed to turn onto South Martin Luther King Drive after making its way down U.S. Route 36. Instead, it turned onto East Wood Street, which confused some people who were waiting to see it on the original course. "I'm not sure why that happened," X said, "but I've gotten a couple of calls about it. I apologize for any inconvenience it caused." Despite the sudden change in plans, a number of people still watched intently and reverently as the beam was left in the hands of the E.L. Pruitt employees. Axe addressed the crowd standing in the workshop's parking lot and acknowledged them for funding and supporting the project. "My humble thanks to everyone here who has helped us get to this point," she said. "This I-beam is on its next journey to become our Decatur 911 memorial." The Decatur Park District Board approved the lakefront construction site on July 5th after the committee had raised the $70,000 needed to build the memorial. Fundraising efforts have ranged from patriotic tattoos, with proceeds donated by Oakwood Tattoo, to a contest for Best Shoebox Mardi Gras Parade Float at the St. Patrick's School, with students voting by putting money in an envelope for the cause. Organizers are still accepting donations to build park benches and engraved bricks to be installed around the site, Axe said. As E.L. Pruitt's lead foreman for the project, Tim Laniers, 60, said he felt excited and proud about his part in building the memorial, especially as someone who vividly remembers what it felt like to hear the news of what happened on September 11th. I can drive back to the memorial in 2 years or 10 years down the road and go, "Look at that. I built that," he said with a smile. "It's still looking good." And I believe that concludes that article. Staying with the front page, we're going to read a next article called Fun to Stay with the YMCA out of Decatur. And the subtitle is, "For 82 years, the facility remains part of Ed Condon's routine." It is also submitted by Justin Kahn. Ed Condon's first trip to the Decatur YMCA in 1935 did not go well. A friend of Condon's, Roe Skidmore, had invited Condon to the Y, then housed at 151 West Prairie Avenue, to play handball. According to what Condon told former H&R Community News editor Bob Falstrom in 1989, he, (Skidmore, beat me unmercifully. But Condon came back to the Y, and he kept coming back. 82 years later, the Y is still part of Condon's routine. At 97, he is the Decatur Family YMCA's oldest and longest-running member. "I started coming because of handball, mostly, but eventually it just became part of my routine," Condon said. "It is not the only reason I've lived so long, but it had a lot to do with it." Though Condon was humbled in his first try at handball, he was soon beating all comers to the sport, played on a court or against a single wall by players who used their hands to strike the ball. According to the December 24, 1954 Decatur Herald, Condon had been the top singles handball player in Decatur for several years and had performed well on the national stage. That was after Condon's stint as a flight instructor in Fort Worth, Texas during World War II. "I went to the Y in Fort Worth, too," Condon said. Following the war, Condon got married and became a real estate salesman, but he was never too busy for the Y. When Condon began coming to the YMCA in 1935, the building at 151 West Prairie Avenue was the sixth Decatur location in the organization's history, which dates back to 1877. At that time, the YMCA was geared toward offering spiritual comfort and a place to stay for wayward men. On March 11, 1877, I.E. Brown and eight other young men met in room number one of the First Methodist Church on the northwest corner of Water and William and formed Decatur's first YMCA. The YMCA moved around frequently in its early years before. Thanks to a donation from James Milliken, a building was opened downtown in August of 1903 at 151 West Prairie Avenue, the building Condon first came to as a boy. But then, physical activity was gradually supplanting the more strictly religious activities associated with the Y. In October of 1952, the original Y building at 151 West Prairie Avenue was torn down and replaced with the building that still stands in that location. It served as the YMCA until 2001, when the current location at 220 West McKinley Avenue was constructed. Condon said, "While the facilities and equipment have changed drastically, the atmosphere itself has remained the same. The Y has always treated everyone equally and fairly," Condon said. Condon eventually quit playing handball and took up racquetball. Now he uses a few of the machines in the exercise room before heading into the lobby for coffee. "It helps keep up my muscles toned, Condon said. "I mostly just do the bicycle. I try to do chin lift, but I can't do that anymore. I just hang there." Condon used to meet with friends every morning and have coffee after working out or playing racquetball. Most of the friends Condon went to the Y with through the years have either quit going or have died. But Condon is always reaching out to make new friends. He still comes to the Y 4 to 5 times a week. "He is very faithful," said Condon's wife, Anne, laughing. "His motto has always been, 'The Y is about fitness and friendships.' That's been a winning combination for him." YMCA CEO Matt Whitehead is one of the new friends Condon has made. I really got to know Ed after I became the CEO, and every time I see him, he brings a smile to my face, Whitehead said. It's the same thing for our staff members and other members. He is inspiring. He has made the Y a regular part of his life for his entire life, and I think it has helped give him a long, happy, prosperous life. And that does conclude that actual article, but on the subset, there's a little history of the YMCA, and I'll just read through that in case anyone might be interested. On March 11, 1877, I.E. Brown and eight other young men met in room number one of the First Methodist Church on the northwest corner of Water and William Street and formed First Young Men's Christian Association to help bring spiritual comfort to wayward men. May of 1878, with around 75 members, the Decatur YMCA moves to rooms on the second floor of 148 Merchant Street. Needing more space, in 1892, the YMCA moved into the H Backrack Building at the northeast corner of East Main and Lincoln Square. Backracks was a clothing store in Decatur. In November of 1893, the YMCA found a home at 330 North Main Street for a decade. The first basketball game played in Decatur was at that location. In 1898, a second YMCA was formed in Decatur near the Wabash Depot at 780 East Cerro Gordo Street, known as the Railroad YMCA. It was equipped with sleeping rooms, a dining room, auditorium, gym, night school classrooms, and a library, and was open 24 hours a day. It is estimated that by the time it closed in 1962, the Railroad YMCA had served 2 million meals and provided rooms for 500,000 men. Thanks in large part to a donation from James Milliken, a new building was constructed and opened at 151 West Prairie Street in 1905. By the end of the year, membership had reached 900. Needing a larger building, in 1950, the old building was razed and a new one built at 151 West Prairie that still stands today and opened in October of 1952. And finally, in 2001, a new YMCA was constructed at 220 West McKinley Avenue. It helped relieve the parking headaches downtown with a 249-space parking lot. It also included a child development daycare center. That's very interesting, and that concludes our YMCA history. All right, we're going to move into the local and state section, and our first article to be read is going to be Arcola's Dutch Kitchen Closing, subtitled Served Downtown for More Than 47 Years. This is out of Arcola, submitted by Sharon Bericklau. The closing this week of a downtown Arcola restaurant has residents reminiscing about the stories and meals shared with friends for over 47 years. Ruth Ann and Alan Yoder announced recently that they are closing their Dutch Kitchen restaurant on August 20th, after nearly five decades of plate lunches and what Alan calls grandma-style cooking. The Yoders have decided to retire, and without a buyer for the business at 127 East Main Street, they decided to close. "It is a lot of effort," Alan Yoder said. "We have been doing it a long time, and it is time to stop." The Dutch Kitchen is one in line of a family businesses in the Arcola area, dating back to the Yoders family operation of the former Rockholm Gardens tourism attractions near Arthur. In the 1970s, Alan and Ruth Ann brought the Amish-style meals from Rockholm Gardens to the former Downtowner restaurant in Arcola. "It is a plate with meat, potato, and a vegetable," Alan said. "That's the basic meal." The Yoders added fresh baked pies, a salad bar, and a variety of sandwiches to the basic formula, along with plates of homemade bread and apple butter. The combination has attracted locals and visitors, some who plan trips north and south on nearby Interstate 57 to include a stop at the Dutch Kitchen. Starting at the end of March, it gets really busy as people come back from Florida, Ruth Ann Yoder said. On Friday, Dave and Sue Kukula of Springfield, Missouri, were having a last lunch at the Dutch Kitchen. Former Illinois residents, the Kukulas plan their trips home to see children and include a stop in Arcola. It's definitely a shorter trip if we take Interstate 55 instead of 57, Dave Kukula said, but we like to stop here. Locals will also miss the Dutch Kitchen. Magazine publisher Don Rankin eats breakfast there most mornings, and he and his wife, Linda, usually meet friends on Tuesday and Wednesdays for meals. They're closed on Mondays, and you can really see the difference in the traffic in downtown Arcola, Rankin said. The Rankins also praised the Yoders for their involvement in community projects and Chamber of Commerce events. That support has helped Arcola remain viable, according to Judy Thomas, who works at My Favorite Things, a gift shop down the street. Having the interstate helps Arcola attract visitors, she said, and having the Dutch Kitchen has meant people planned to stop to enjoy a good meal. That then benefits the business community. The restaurant and its equipment remain for sale. Rankin and others hope a buyer can be found. Having the restaurant makes a difference in the community, especially in the downtown area, he said. I hope that someone sees how popular it is and decides to take a chance. Alan Yoder said he would like someone else to have the same positive experiences he and Ruth Ann have had. Restaurants are a lot of work and it takes time, but the connection you make with your customers makes it worthwhile, he said. We have people who've come here their whole lives. We will miss them. And that concludes the article on Arcola's Dutch Kitchen. Next, we'll move into an article titled Meet the Teacher, Ushers in the School Year. Kids, parents, and even former students got a chance to start the school year off right with Meet the Teacher Night at Sangamon Valley East Elementary. Attendees got a chance to bring in their school supplies and see their classrooms before the school starts today. Several students just dropped by to say hello and even give a hug or two to their former teachers. Most other Macon County schools are set to start this week. Lutheran School Association classes also start today. Public schools in Decatur and Cerro Gordo start Wednesday. Starting on Thursday are the public school districts of Maroa Forsyth, Meridian, Mount Zion, Warrensburg-Latham, Arthur, Lovington, Atwood, Hammond, and Bement in Decatur. In Decatur, Holy Family and St. Patrick grade schools and St. Teresa High School also start on Thursday. Next week, the Decatur Christian schools start August 22nd and Argenta Oriana schools start on August 23rd. And that concludes that article. Now let's move into Decatur Park Singers Set the Tempo for Summer Fun. This is written by Jeanette Beckett. For 42 years, the Decatur Park Singers were the pride of the Decatur Park District. Started by the late Jerry Menz, M-E-N-Z, the group of college-aged singers, dancers, and musicians performed classic rock, country, and show tunes at local festivals and fairs. During the group's history, the Park Singers were invited to perform throughout Illinois, the county, and even overseas. The singers enjoyed opportunities to dance and sing in front of President Ronald Reagan, appear at the World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee, tour Japan in 1988 and Europe in 2008, and perform at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. The Decatur Park Singers entertained audiences with their high-energy performances, complete with beautiful harmonies and intricate choreography. The Park District eventually added the Young Park Singers program with pint-sized entertainers, similar to the original Park Singers. no summer was complete without seeing at least one show by the young cast of local and college talent. In 2013, the Park District ended the Decatur Park Singers program, citing increased costs, fewer bookings, and declining audiences. District leaders pledged instead to offer arts programs that could reach more people. Let's see. So that will complete that article. And just to clarify on that last article, it comes from a section titled Celebrate What's Great About Our Region. The Herald and Review each day is listing a reason that Decatur region is loved. We are profiling people, places, and a history that are special to our region and that make it a great place in which to live. So follow the previous 100 Reasons to Love the Decatur Area at theheraldreview.com. And so anyway, the Decatur Park Singers article that I just read was out of that little article. That concludes that section. Okay, next out of the local edition, local and state, is a Decatur teen rejects a plea deal. Submitted by Tony Reed, subtitle Sheraton Cook Jr. faces trial on first-degree murder charges. One of the four men accused in the robbery and murder of a Decatur woman in her apartment told a judge Monday that he was not interested in a plea deal on first-degree murder charges. The attorney for Sheraton L. Cook, Jr., 18, had worked out a deal with the Macon County State's Attorney Office involving a 20-year sentence for Cook and his alleged role in the death of a 21-year-old Celcy Taylor. She was shot and killed September 7, 2015, when prosecutors say Cook and three other youths, all aged 16 at the time, tried to rob her in her Northside apartment. Taylor died after being shot four times. Her roommate, Brittany Wilson, suffered multiple gunshot wounds but survived. Cook said he did not take part in the shootings or the robbery. Of the others accused in the crime, Darian Evans is charged by prosecutors with actually firing the shots that killed Taylor. His murder case is due for a disposition hearing on Thursday. The third defendant, Taquan Klein, has already pleaded guilty to a first-degree murder charge carrying a 20-year sentence and is due to be sentenced August 23rd. The fourth defendant, Ryan O'Neill, faces a bench trial on his murder charge starting today. Cook's attorney, Philip Tibbs, had told Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith on Monday that the deal with prosecutors involving Cook was all set to go last week, but now Cook did not want it. He is not going to accept any offer from the state, Tibbs said. Cook, who is being held in custody, now faces a maximum sentence of almost 100 years in prison if convicted on the murder charge. Griffith warned Cook that not following the advice of his attorney meant that he was not placing himself in a good position. Sometimes it makes sense to listen to one's lawyer, the judge said. Cook told the court that he had tried to do a deal that would involve a charge of armed robbery. Although I did not commit murder or robbery, he added. Assistant State's Attorney Kate Quirtz said she had received a letter from Cook saying he would plead guilty to a robbery charge, which she rejected. That is not going to happen, she said of Cook's written offer. The case is now set for a pretrial hearing on October 11th. If you are going to hire a new lawyer, that lawyer needs to be present on that day, Griffith told Cook. And that does complete that article and that page of the local and state. We're going to record a little bit of a calendar for the Herald and Review for this week. On Tuesday, today, at noon to 1, Decatur Public Library is hosting yoga in the Madden Auditorium. It is a basic class with local instructors. On Wednesday, they are going to have an August birthday celebration at noon in the Decatur-Macon County Senior Center. Thursday, Pony Express Days from 5 to 10:30 p.m. at the Mount Zion's Lions Center. We have a few obituaries. The first one is out of Decatur, Janice Ruth Webner, 75 of Decatur, died at 12:45 a.m. on Sunday, August 13, 2017, in her home surrounded by her family. Funeral service to celebrate Jan's life will be at 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 16, 2017, at Life Builders Church of God, 833 West Pershing Road in Decatur. Pastor Tim Lusitana will officiate. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Burial will be at 2 p.m. at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Riverton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the family or the charity of choice. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. And next we have out of Lovington, Barbara L. Koslow, 80, passed away 6:24 p.m. Wednesday or Sunday, August 13, 2017, at the Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services will be at 12 p.m. Friday, August 18, 2017, at McMullen Young Funeral Home, Lovington. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Keller Cemetery, Lovington. Memorials may be made to the Lovington Church of God. And I do believe those are the only two obituaries that are listed in the paper this morning. We do have a few funerals that are pending. We have a Beth A. Carter, 58 of Decatur, who died Monday, August 14, 2017. Tanzas Logan Funeral Service and Care. We have Emmy Gooley, 94 of Decatur, who died Monday, August 14, 2017. Moran and Goble Funeral Home assisting. Elaine Kostinski, 86 of Decatur, died on Sunday, August 13, 2017. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home will be serving. And Lillian B. Richards, 96 of Decatur, died on Saturday, August 12, 2017. Seitz, Seitz, Funeral Home of Moquegua is handling the care. That concludes the funeral services that are pending as well. We have a few births to announce. We have Joel Allen and Mindy Warren Holthouse had a girl. They are from Pena. The girl was born August 10, 2017. Bryson Scott and Amanda Durbin O'Loughlin had a baby on a baby girl, Decatur, August 10th. We have Martez and Ricky Jones had a Decatur, had a baby boy on August 10th. Whitney McGinnis had a baby boy August 10th, and she is from Decatur. Austin William and Morgan Cerrone Lewis of Decatur had a baby boy on August 11th. Yasmin Flowers of Decatur had a baby boy on August 13th. And Christopher Allen and Kayla Naomi Deluge Williams had a baby boy on August 13th, and they reside in Decatur as well. That concludes the birth announcements for the Decatur area. I'm going to take a short break. This is Linda, having read the first part of the Decatur Herald and Review for August 15, 2017. I hope you'll return with us in just a few moments to listen to part two.